Every community has a place where people meet and stories are told. The East Coast has stoops, the South has porches, and in Alaska, we have Arctic entries.
Here, Alaskans share their personal stories, funny, sad, and sweet. These stories are originally told at our monthly storytelling event in Anchorage. At each live performance, seven people tell a seven-minute-long true story related to the show's theme.
I'm Jason Brandeis.
And I'm Rosie Robards.
Welcome to Arctic Entries on KSKA, Anchorage. This hour of Arctic Entries will feature stories on getting schooled.
We'll hear from several well-known Anchorage residents on how they learned their lessons the hard way. We have a story from former superintendent of the Anchorage School District, Carol Como, about how one of her students made her rethink the way things were done at ASD.
And Jill Burke and Tony Hopfinger of the Alaska Dispatch, an online news source, learned a few lessons after they crossed paths with a U.S. Senate candidate and received some national attention. One lesson...
If you don't want to be labeled a liberal blogger, don't dress like a liberal blogger, Tony.
It's Alaska, you know?
All these stories were originally told in September 2011 at the Snow Goose Theater in Anchorage as part of our live event, the second Tuesday of each month.
Our first story is told by Bill Pearson, who grew up in Fairbanks. Bill knows when it is time to admit defeat. But thanks to some motivation and good advice, he has a story about how he did not give up.
How many of you have heard of the term getting girled? I define getting girled in the most chauvinist sense possible. It's getting beat by a woman in an athletic event. I know a lot about getting girled by my sister. My sister is here tonight all the way from the rainforest of Cordova, Alaska, and she's right in the middle of the audience. Kate Arduzer and her husband, my good friend Alex, and I'm probably going to embarrass her for a little bit tonight, but she's earned it. My sister, right out of the blocks, was an amazing athlete. I remember I was a year ahead of her in school, and her freshman year, not 6 weeks into the cross-country running season, the Fairbanks paper had a story talking about how she was instrumental to the team's dominance in a cross-country running meet over the weekend. And, you know, I read the article and I thought, well, that's great. She's my younger sister and she really annoys me. And how am I not getting any recognition for my esteemed skills as a dungeon master in Dungeons & Dragons? But you know, she quickly transitioned from cross-country running to cross-country skiing, and that's where she really shined. It was pretty remarkable, and remarkable for a couple of reasons. We grew up in Fairbanks, and she kind of took the state by storm, winning multiple state championships and a team state championship and some junior national medals. And people in Fairbanks just loved it. Anytime Fairbanks beats up on Anchorage, the town just goes wild. It's literally front page news. I mean, I know everybody down here doesn't really know where Fairbanks is, but you should try it. You should try it sometime. You know, like I said, she had a really great ski career, but the whole time... it was really hard for me to take seriously because I was a wrestler. And Nordic skiers just, they had way too much fun. They were way too happy. They spent all their time talking about how healthy they were when they were in wax rooms getting black lung. And in Fairbanks, it was just frigid to be out there all the time, and they wore too much Lycra. And... The thing about skiing was I would ski until the wrestling season started, and I did it for two reasons. One, to kind of get in shape, and two, to chase around the two hotties on the team who were Haley Wappet and Allie Dinez. And if you didn't know what they looked like, they were stunning. But it didn't really do me any good. But I wasn't going to beat my sister in any of the ski races because she beat most of the guys on the varsity team anyway. So you know, how was I going to do it in 6 weeks? But fast forward a couple of years, and she goes on, and she has a really amazing ski career. NCAA All-American, wins pretty much every ski marathon the state of Alaska has to offer, and goes and skis in the World Cup a couple of times, which I like to say is kind of a big deal. And during that transitional time when she's skiing at the national level, I moved to Anchorage. And right out of the bat, she said, "Bill, if you're going to live in Anchorage, you got to Nordic ski." And I was kind of like, okay. And, you know, sometimes I'm pretty good at taking orders from my sister, believe it or not. And I got into it. I found that I really enjoyed it. And I do everything I could to get better at skiing. And part of that was trying to keep up with my sister. And I'd mimic her technique because Nordic skiing is a very technical intensive sport. You got to be fit and you have got to have good technique. And I'd try and ski with her and just look at her glide, her technique, her tempo, all that, you know, stuff Nordic skiers do. And I had the fortune of making some really good friends that were Nordic skiers. Actually, in the front row, Holly Brooks, who went on to become an Olympian, was my roommate. And her then boyfriend that didn't pay rent, now husband, Rob Whitney, who just made it here and got a speeding ticket making it here, I guess. But anyway, they were my roommates, and they let me ski with them. And actually, looking around the audience, I'm pretty amazed. Thank you, guys. There's a lot of people here that I can't name them all that made me better skier. And, you know, I really started getting into it, and I, you know, after a while, I was like, well, maybe I could try and beat my sister in a ski race. You know, maybe I have transitioned from wrestling to Nordic skiing. And, you know, I was like, well, maybe I'll beat Kate. And I'd enter these races, and I wouldn't get her. And I remember in the tour of Anchorage, the elite guys went out before the elite girls. And I had, you know, pretty good race, not by some of these people's standards, but by my standard, it wasn't bad. And I remember waiting in the stadium, watching the scoreboard, and I was seeing the timing. And she comes in, and I think, oh, man, this is going to be close. And she got me by 50 seconds. That's 1 second a kilometer. Do you know what that does to a guy? I mean, you're like, I could have skied 1 second a kilometer faster, but I didn't. But I didn't. But I had gotten into skiing, and 2 years ago I saw there was going to be a race called the White Mountain 100. And that was, as the name implies, a 100-mile skiing, running, biking race north of Fairbanks. And I knew I had to do it. And I signed up immediately, and I got in, and that winter I trained like crazy. I'd never skied 100 miles. I'd heard of people doing it, but I never had, and I didn't know what was going to happen. And I was training by fear. And okay. I did okay in that race. I had a pretty good season. I even tied somebody in the back of the room whose name I'm not going to mention in a ski race. And but that next year, the race had a lot of challenges. It was cold. It was brutal. I broke my binding, and I was just ready to go this year. And a year ago, I tried to get a lot of people to sign up, and some of the people in the audience did. Others didn't because they were worried they'd have too much fun. But my sister did. And right out of the blocks, I was like, sweet, she's retired, she's living in Cordova, I'm going to get her. So, you know, 17 miles into the race, I'm checking out of the first checkpoint, and here she comes, and she says, I kind of waited for a second for her, and I was like, Kate, you want me to wait for you? And she's like, no, get going. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. So I ski a little bit longer, and I have to pull over because I'm getting dehydrated. I'm really feeling the race. You know, it's 100 miles. You got to stay hydrated. And I pull over, and my sister just comes flying by. I mean, she looks like this force that just took the state of Alaska by storm 15 years ago. And I saw her two other times on the course. I saw her as I was cresting this hill. She was flying down the valley, probably already a mile in front of me. And I saw her at the next checkpoint, and she was checking out as I was checking in. And she said, and I said, Kate, I feel horrible. And she said, Bill, eat some food, drink some Coke, hydrate, and get back on the trail. And I was like, whoa, I guess that's what I better do. And because I was actually having some thoughts about dropping out. I mean, the checkpoint was warm. And I finished the race. And I finished 3 hours faster than I had the year before. And that's the thing is, even though I got grilled by my sister, I had a pretty good race. Thank you. So.
That was Bill Pearson, and you're listening to Arctic Entries on KSKA Anchorage.
During this hour, we hear Alaskans tell stories about learning things the hard way.
So each storyteller has 7 minutes to share his or her story. You may have noticed the timer in that last story. At 5 minutes, the hosts of the live Arctic Entries event let the storytellers know that it's almost time to tie things up. And then another timer sounds at 7 minutes to let the storytellers know it's time to make way for the next speaker.
Yeah, it's difficult to tell a story in 7 minutes. So the hosts help the storytellers out a bit. Our next story is told by Carol Como. Como was the superintendent for the Anchorage School District for about 12 years until she retired in 2012. Here's her story on getting schooled, live at Arctic Entries.
Thank you. Well, when Darcy contacted me, I don't know why I was thinking I could do this, but we'll give it a shot. I'm going to tell you a story about how really my life was changed dramatically in January of 2001 by a high school student who I'll call Tim. We were, I was asked to go on the Gil Sanchez Intercambios show. Some of you probably remember that back a few years. And we were, I was on with Kevin Jennings, who at the time was the executive director of GLSEN, which was a national organization that supported gay, lesbian, and bisexual, transgendered youth. And we had were debating and discussing why I didn't think that we should have to change our discrimination and harassment policy. I thought it was perfectly fine. Because when I was a teacher and when I had been a principal, I know when young people were teasing and harassing people and they used words that weren't acceptable, then we took disciplinary action, and that was harassment, and that's how we operated. So that was my kind of frame of reference. And so we were going back and forth, and I took a few call-in shows, and they were in, talk radio is different today. It was actually civilized in those days. But so anyway, I got a phone call from a student named Tim, and he started to tell me his story about how he was treated at his high school in the Anchorage School District. He didn't name the school, but he started to tell me his story. And I was just devastated. The more I listened, the more uncomfortable I got. And I said, I really want to talk to you, but I don't think this is the appropriate, place to talk, because I really need to hear where you're going to school, what's happening to you, so I can work on that and protect your confidentiality. So I gave him the phone number for my office, and I thought, I wonder if he'll call. And amazingly, the next day, he called. It was a Monday. He called me, and that really made me feel good. So I spent about 45 minutes on the phone with him. He had gotten his cell phone, and I don't know where he was at school that day, but he was talking to me. But the point was that he just spilled his guts. He just let it all hang out. He just had to let somebody know what was happening to him. And he told me that whenever somebody harassed him, whenever they teased him, when they called him names, that there was nobody at the school that he could go to other than some of his friends who were equally harassed and tormented at school. And I said, in my typical naive way at the time, I said, well, there must be a teacher, there must be a counselor, there must be an administrator, somebody at the school that can help you. And he said, they won't do anything. He said, when I talk about it, they tell me, we can't do anything about it. You're just going to have to live with the way you are. And he acknowledged he was out, he was gay, he just wanted to be accepted for who he was. He just wanted to go to school and be safe, as any student ought to be able to do in the school district or any place else. And so it was so obvious to me that he had no support. And I said, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Now, and I'm not going to use your name, and I'm not going to tell the principals of the school, but I have a meeting, actually, in 2 days with the high school principals. And I'm going to tell this story, but I'm not going to divulge who you are. And so, and I said, is that okay? And he said, yes. And I said, you have truly changed my mind. I had a mindset that there was absolutely nothing wrong with the policy, that if somebody called people names, like racial slurs, religious things, fag or queer, all those names, that was not okay with our current policy. And it was clear when he told me that when I asked about that, teachers would say, well, there's nothing in the rules that says people can't say that. People have been bullied for years. They've been taunted. You're just going to have to learn to live with it. And so when I realized that was really his reality, then it started to change my reality. And when I went and met with the high school principals, I told the story without the name of the school and without trying to disguise a little bit so they wouldn't have any idea. And I said, tell me how you deal with this. And it was obvious the majority of them, the principals at the time that I was talking to, were very uncomfortable dealing with this because there wasn't any language in our policy about sexual orientation. There was nothing in the policy, and a lot of them were quite religious, and they had a real problem themselves dealing with this whole issue of homosexuality and young people who were finally accepting who they were, and they were coming out, and they were talking about it. They just wanted to be friends with people just like everybody else in schools. And so I said, and the other thing Tim told me was that he'd gone to his principal and wanted to form a gay-straight alliance. And at that time, we had a number of our high schools that had gay-straight alliances in the schools, and they really were working and helping young people. This school did not, and the principal said, I don't want that in my school. I don't like it. It's against my religion, and I'm just not going to allow that to happen. So I told the principals. I said, there are two things I expect of you. Number one, if students come to you and request to form a club, and it's called the Gay Straight Alliance, that is absolutely within our board policy, and it is absolutely to be supported. You don't have to sponsor it, but there may be a faculty member, somebody who's willing to be there with the young people, but it's basically an expectation. The other thing is I expect you to deal with this and help these young people be safe in your school. They have as much right, as so do the staff, have as much right to work and come to school and be safe. And from that time, I started going out to some of the high schools, and I went to the schools that had gay-straight alliances, and I asked them, how is this helping? And they said it really made a difference because in many places there was a safe place for young people to go. And they weren't all gay or lesbian. They were straight. They were everything. They simply wanted to help their friends. And from that point, the Student Advisory Board then passed a resolution with a lot of support from their sponsors with the gay-straight alliances, and they brought that forward and to the school board policy committee, and I then advocated for that with our policy committee and said, we have to change the word. We have to put these words in this policy. We need to tell our staff this is not okay. So the policy committee changed it. The board at the time, the school board at the time, unanimously passed the policy on two readings. We had lots of public testimony. I'd met with the religious leaders in the community. And even Jerry Privo, who did not want to support the change, he did not escalate the issue like he has with the other times when this has come before the municipal assembly. I was amazed. He wrote a letter to the board. He wrote a compass piece, but he did not escalate it. And so when it passed, it was the same time that the out-of-the-closet display was coming at LUSAC, and it was interesting to me. We got our policy through. The words were inserted. We've gone on, and 11 years later, we still have that policy, but you know what's going on in City Hall right now. We're trying to get things changed. So that's how a young man impacted my life and hopefully made things better. Thank you.
That was Carol Como live at the Snow Goose Theater in September 2011. You're listening to Arctic Entries on KSKA Anchorage. I'm Jason Brandeis.
And I'm Rosie Robarts.
As you may know, anyone may volunteer to tell a story at our live Arctic Entries events. For more on that, visit arcticentries.com. Our stories on this show are about learning lessons the hard way. Our theme is getting schooled.
At each live event, we also feature music from a local artist. We'll break now from stories and play a tune from Meg Mackey. This was recorded live at Arctic Entries in March 2012.
There's so many ways that I could say screw off to you, but I don't want to do that, babe. I wear my heart on my sleeve and I felt grief. You can judge me for that, but I'll never take it back. And you can write me off, and you can push me away, but you'll never find a love like mine, thicker than blood, patient, true. So much waiting, I think it's too late. I'm biding my time till you make up your mind. And I'm down on my knees again, asking why you do I break to bend. Now I'm questioning stupid fool, you stupid. so many ways I could say screw off to you and to the day.
Thank you, guys.
Strength through the window, oh baby, I'm cutting the crap, 'cause I've got a ray of sunshine, and since there's nothing you can do about the way you are, I'm leaving the park. I've got a ray of sunshine. Raise your glass up. It's time for kicking ass. Forget the past, yeah. 'Cause I've got a ray.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you.
You're listening to Arctic Entries on KSK Anchorage. Thank you, Meg Mackey, for the music. Now we'll hear more true stories from Alaskans.
Next up, journalist Michelle Theriault-Boots. Before moving to Anchorage, Michelle worked as a newspaper reporter traveling in Asia and Africa. She says she did all this with an impressively low mugging rate. Here's Michelle Theriault-Boots live at the Snow Goose Theater in Anchorage.
Hi, everybody. I did bring my notes up here, but I've already spilled beer on them, rendering them illegible, so don't worry. So tonight I'd like to tell you a story about something that happened to me while I was living in Johannesburg, South Africa, a couple years ago. I was there for an internship with the Associated Press, and I was very excited, and I was very eager to prove myself as a journalist, so they would send me out to do the really cool stories instead of getting stuck in the office writing news briefs all day. Has anybody here ever been to Johannesburg, South Africa? All right. So, beautiful, vibrant, interesting, lovely city. Little bit of a crime problem. Little bit of a crime problem. And by that, I mean it's been called the murder capital of the world, probably fairly. I guess the way I would describe Johannesburg's crime issue is at night, if you're driving in Johannesburg, you legally do not have to stop at red lights, because if you do, you will be carjacked. Like, 100% you will be carjacked. So carjacking there, carjacking there is almost like the equivalent of cross-country skiing in Anchorage. It's sort of like a weekend hobby, like a wholesome family thing, you know. So when I went there, everyone said, including all these journalists working for the Associated Press in Africa, you can't walk anywhere. You know, the bureau's in a really dangerous neighborhood. You really are not allowed to walk anywhere. And I was kind of like, well, screw that. That's ridiculous, right? I mean, I had been sort of traveling around the world in my early 20s with blithe ignorance and kind of magically not having bad things happen to me for years and years. And I was the kind of person who would, you know, email my family like, hey, Mom and Dad, I snuck into Burma. Did you know the internet's actually illegal here? I probably shouldn't even be emailing you at all. Talk to you in 3 weeks. Bye. So I sort of had this, I secretly had this idea that, okay, quick aside, did anyone here also waste their childhood playing Sonic the Hedgehog, the Sega Genesis game? Oh, thank God, someone. So in this video game, the hedgehog can become wrapped, the character is a hedgehog, he can become wrapped in this like blue invincibility shield, and nothing bad can happen to him while he's in the invincibility shield. Like, if there's fire thrown at him, nothing happens. Falls off a cliff, nothing happens. So when I was traveling, and I was in my early 20s, I kind of secretly felt like I had an invincibility shield, like Sonic the Hedgehog. And, you know, I was immortal and also invincible. So I didn't really take kindly to all these people telling me that Johannesburg was dangerous and I couldn't walk anywhere. So one day, I'm sitting in the bureau, and I've been there for about 2 weeks, and I'm just really sick of being stuck inside buildings, inside taxis, inside my ridiculous place I'm living that has barbed wire and security gates. And I get this idea that I want to go walk to this cafe where they have this really good sandwich. And people who know me well, like Emily Fehrenbacher, know that I really love sandwiches. Like, really. Like, the way a lot of people feel about their family and friends, that's how I feel about sandwiches. So, like, I love sandwiches. So I start thinking about this, and it becomes kind of a fixation. And then I'm like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to leave, and I'm just going to walk to this cafe. It's only, like, 2 miles away. You know, what could possibly go wrong? It's going to be fine. I'm 25. I'm invincible. I'm immortal. What could go wrong? And the first clue that this is not going to go well is that I don't tell anyone else in the office what I'm doing. You know, these are all, like, hardcore war correspondent journalists who just got back from Mogadishu, where they were on vacation, you know. And I know what they're going to say to me. They're going to say, no, do not walk there. It's a bad idea. So I kind of, like, get up, and I sort of mumble something. I'm going to buy coffee downstairs. And I walk downstairs, and I go out the security gate, and I go out the next security gate, and I go out the third security gate. And the security guard's kind of looking at me like, okay, don't get the intern killed. And so I head out on the street, and I'm like, oh, it's a beautiful day. Gosh, people are so paranoid. It's so stupid. Johannesburg's lovely. It's sunny out. Immediately, I get mugged. Just two blocks away. And here's the thing. The kid mugging me is a kid. I mean, he's, like, probably in fourth grade. And, you know, there could be a long aside here about how messed up it is that there's a child out mugging people, and we could talk about, you know, the horrible legacy of apartheid. We could talk about a lot of things, but I'd probably have to pay you, and you guys would be here for a very long time if I were to go that route. So, bottom line, I'm getting mugged by a little kid, and he has a knife, though, like a really scary knife, and he's kind of like brandishing it, and he's just saying, cell phone, cell phone, cell phone, over and over again. And so I have this absurdly large purse, and I'm like digging through. I'm like, God, where's my cell phone? And meanwhile, totally Johannesburg, there are just cars driving by. People like, oh, look at that girl getting mugged. I wonder if I can make this light, you know? And so I'm like, oh. So finally, I dig out a cell phone, and I like throw it at him. And he turns to run away. Probably he's late to soccer practice or something. You know, he needs to get there. And he thanks me. And I'm just like, oh. That is the saddest thing ever. So he runs off, and I'm just standing there in the middle of traffic, and slowly it's dawning on me, you just got mugged by a child while going to lunch, and you lost one of the AP's cell phones. Nice work. So I'm thinking, okay, so now I have to go back into this office where there are, again, the badass, hardcore, you know, war correspondents who have gotten back from a reporting trip in the Congo without losing so much as a notepad and pencil, and I just got mugged on my way to lunch. Awesome. They're going to really think a lot of me. So I go back, and it's a quick walk, like 2 blocks away. So I get back up, I walk in, and then I do what I really think any seasoned journalist would do in the situation. I burst into tears. So they're like, oh my God, this being Johannesburg, they think I've just seen something like really awful go down. They're like, oh my God, what happened? So they all gather around me, and I'm like, I got mugged, and the cell phone's gone. And this lovely French photographer, Jerome, is like, No, these gangs of thugs. No, we will get them. No. And I'm like, oh, I just don't have the heart to tell you that it was not a gang of thugs. It was a little kid. So it turns out they were so kind to me. And it turns out that I'm not the only one who this has happened to. Another reporter apparently like let a woman hold his cell phone in a market in Angola one time. And the lady ran away forever. So that made me feel marginally better. But that night, I tell my sob story to my roommate, and she's like, well, we have to go get you your sandwich. So we go out to eat my special sandwich. And I'm like, ooh. And some sandwiches are worth getting mugged for. That's all.
You just heard a live recording from our September 2011 Arctic Entries event. That was Michelle Terrio Boots.
Each month, the Arctic Entries Storyboard works with 7 Alaskans to help them get ready to share their stories at a live event. To listen to these stories and more, visit our website at arcticentries.com.
Our next story is rooted in journalism as well. Tony Hopfinger and Jill Burke work for Alaska Dispatch, an online news source based in Anchorage. Here, they give you a quick rundown of their nationally publicized encounter with a U.S. Senate candidate. Then, they'll share some lessons they took from the experience.
This feels like a variety show. All right, so I guess it's not a big surprise why Alaska Dispatch got invited to talk about getting schooled, because that's exactly what happened to us when we crossed paths with Joe Miller. Last fall, we actually got schooled in a school. No joke. So for those of you who need a refresher course, here's what happened. Tenacious journalists chase after a Senate candidate who doesn't want to talk or reveal answers about his past. Questions were escalating. Journalists file a lawsuit. The questions continue. The Senate candidate still doesn't want to answer. The election is growing close. Tensions continue to mount. There's a town hall meeting. Pesky journalists won't relent. And
and we have nothing else to do on our Sundays.
Yeah, we have nothing else to do on our Sundays. So anyway, candidate draws a line in the sand, refuses to talk, and one particularly pesky journalist gets in the candidate's face, and boom, that journalist, my esteemed editor and boss, Tony Hopfinger, gets schooled, handcuffed, by security goons who are at the event. And suffice it to say, that day we learned quite a few lessons, including things ranging from fashion sense and tips to bathroom etiquette. And I guess we'll run right into that, Tony.
The bathroom etiquette.
You learn they can be awkwardly political situations, unintended.
Right. After the whole event, the incident, or whatever you want to call it, Miller sent out a press release and said that I had followed him into the bathroom. Yes, I did. I did see him in the bathroom before the event, but I didn't ask my questions there. I mean, that's just not the place, you know? We had a debate the next night here at Snow Goose, so I was like, I asked him about that, like, are you going to show? And of course he said no, and I'm like, all right, well, you know, we'll catch up later. But that got all spun out of control real quick, and so it went down as I was the bathroom stalker, and
which also kind of dovetails into another lesson. If you don't want to be labeled a liberal blogger, don't dress like a liberal blogger, Tony.
It's Alaska, you know?
I think what you just said there, if you don't want to be labeled a liberal blogger, don't dress like a liberal blogger, that came from like some national journalist who emailed us the next day and said that I wasn't dressed appropriately. This was like my Sunday, so I had a hoodie on, and I was just there, and I don't know, like, I guess, I don't know where the association of, like, being overweight and being a liberal blogger is. Maybe it's like a Michael Moore thing or something, but one of our writers, Craig Medred, the actual story that night on the event, he wrote about me that I was pot-bellied and overweight writer, which then fed into that. So, yeah, not the best PR on our part, but that's all good. But like, Jill, it was her day off. Why are you even there, Jill? I mean, it was like your son's 16th birthday.
Right, yeah. Bad on my part.
And bring the kids.
Fortunately, we celebrated that the night before. But, yeah, we had the kids in tow, thought that we should stop by and just check in, do our civic duty, allow the children to see this U.S. Senate candidate in a very important race. The daughter was getting interested in videography and filming, so we thought she could play with the flip cam and kind of practice. And so we're there. Ended up being a good thing because it was ultimately the daughter who came up and said, "Hey, Jill," you know, after the event had wrapped up, "Tony's been arrested." We thought, there's no, you know, I just kind of ignored her because it just preposterous, made no sense at all. No, really, Tony's been arrested, or somebody who looks like him, you know, pot-bellied, overweight, crazy hair, glasses, sweatshirt.
Hoodie.
And yeah. It dawns on me and another journalist I'm standing with, Tony has been arrested. We better go see what's going on. So we go careening into the hallway, and, you know, Tony's in some back corner in handcuffs. The goons are there, and turns out the two boys that I had with me were witnesses to the event, and they ended up having to talk to the police, which was a high point of the day for them because they liked the cops' guns and could talk to them about it. And we tried to get the daughter to, like, continue filming and rolling, but that was another lesson for me is remember where you are and who you are and what you're doing, because the reporter instinct is like, you know, no, I will not back down, and I'm going to take pictures of this, and you can't tell us what to do. You know, freedom of the press, free access. Meanwhile, I'm not even considering that the 12-year-old thinks I'm going to get arrested and is freaked out, thinking that a parent's going to end up in jail, and they're totally panicked. So I'm kind of, like, talking to the children, calming them down, and then yelling at the guards, and calming down the children, and yelling at the guards. So have to maintain a little bit of presence of mind.
And the kids were, like, the only witnesses of the whole thing. So, Carol, you guys didn't have cameras yet installed in Central Middle School, so we didn't have any documentation. Because we were too stupid to check our own cameras. Like, we are the online news site of Alaska, but our camera equipment was not working, or our recording equipment, or they just erased it. Could be one of those. So that was another lesson, like, check your camera gear, make sure that's all working so you have some documentation. Go in pairs, like, you know.
Travel in pairs.
Yeah, there were no other journalists around. Take charge of the world or the world will take charge of you. That was, yeah, it went down as sort of like irrational blogger prone to violence was the narrative that was being spun literally while still I was there by Randy DeSoto, Joe Miller's spokesman. So, like, we're a small operation. We don't have a PR department or anything. It took us a while to get on the ball with that. Like, and it didn't help with Craig, like, writing the pot-bellied overweight writer and all that. And
well, and we were like, we like getting the story. We don't like being the story. And so when you have to get the story and you are the story, it's this kind of this crisis of identity. Like, what do we do here?
So in 2012 political election, we'll make sure we have a PR department in place to handle the situation if it gets out of control again. And then I guess the story's not over until it's over.
Right, and we're seeing that now. You know, the things evolve in strange ways, notably in this particular case, the security guard that was behind the handcuffing, the guy that actually did the handcuffing, has since been revealed to be a paid undercover informant who was working with the feds at the time, not necessarily those hours he was on duty with the Miller campaign, but during that time period in a long-running militia case, which became very public in March, and he has since gone into hiding. and you know, Joe Miller continues to be a big player on the political scene, raising his
profile. So final lesson of the day, don't be afraid to ask hard questions. That's all of our job, not just the journalists. That's our job.
That was Anchorage journalists Jill Burke and Tony Hopfinger on Arctic Entries. On this episode of Arctic Entries, our theme is getting schooled. We're hearing lessons on learning things the hard way.
Our last story for this show comes from Eric Graffy in the form of a limerick. Graffy has lived in Anchorage since 2006, and he says he's schooled regularly by the blue of the sea, the evening sky, the mountain lakes, and the flowers nearby. Oh, and by his dog, Buddy.
So I have a story about my dog, and it's silly. And I have to read it. There once was a dog from Wasilla. And he was anything but plain vanilla. He was red and round and mentally unsound. And his story is the subject of this thriller. What I wanted was a canine, sweet, benign, with whom it would be easy and joyful to spend time, a gentle companion, no threat to anyone. So I searched for this partner online. I found him on Craigslist, advertised as a pound pup. This guy's yours if you want him, just come pick him up. He's a stout little heeler. Please send us a feeler, otherwise he's off to the pound when the week's up. So I went out to see him, and he won me straight over. He had big eyes and big ears, and he smelled a little like clover. His name was Buddy, and he was a little ugly, but my heart said he was the one, this little rover. So I took him home to the city and set him up nice and pretty. To work he would come, and when work was done, we'd head happily home humming a ditty. But then one day, okay, it was day three, I was taking Buddy out for a pee. When he saw to his left a delectable cleft, and a glint in his eye I did see, a lady stood near a shop's window glass, acting innocent as if she'd just come from mass. But Buddy took a jump, and aiming straight for her rump, with a yelp of sheer joy, bit her ass. The lady, she screamed, while her friend stood and stared. Buddy looked rather pleased, and not at all like he cared. I apologized profusely, tried to explain rather obtusely, but more or less, the two women just glared. For a long time, I retribution fearfully awaited, but eventually, and at long last, the crisis abated. Would I kick Buddy out? There were moments of doubt, but I soon realized that to be stuck with this beast, I was fated. Fall turned to winter, and Buddy's troubles did spike. It seemed that there was no manner of mischief this dog didn't like. Moose dog or cat, ankles skinny or fat, into all he would strike terror alike. Finally, Buddy and I realized we needed help. So we signed up for the dog school, basic beginner. I lied on the application, told them Buddy's no sinner. There's nothing he's bit. We're just here to learn sit. They said, good, we'll make him into a winner. On that first night, I arrived in a sweat. Buddy was with me, my dear lovely pet. We walked into class, two dogs did we pass, and Buddy, as always, did fret. But our teacher seemed wise and also quite strange. Her hair was fire red and very deranged. And for us, she had a cold eye, as if to say, oh my, this one's trouble. I see it, and he should be kept well out of range. So we were assigned to a corner, way in the back, between a wall that was padded and a dog named Colby Jack. And something strange occurred, but he relaxed, almost purred, and I remained tense as a squirrel, anticipating attack. But the class passed without incident. Was this a dream? I was perplexed, delighted, confused. What did it all mean? But he behaved. Were we saved? Could this behavior continue? Impossible, it did seem. But week two soon arrived, and everyone was back. There was Darwin, Pilot, Olive, and, of course, Colby Jack, whose human again next to us did remain. And there was the teacher's pet, Leo, whom Buddy might mistake for a snack. Now, Leo is famous, a dachshund writ large. His pictures hung on the wall. He thought himself in charge. He could sit, probably never bit. He helped Pat order us round like a sarge. He would demonstrate tricks for us all, while his name Pat would excitedly call. But for his reward, she did something quite untoward that was nearly enough to appall. She would take an Oscar wiener from a bag she had near her and chewing it to bits into Leo's mouth, it spits and never once alter her demeanor. Anyway, for this second class, Buddy was as good as the last. No biting, no growling, and he was learning tricks fast. Instead of distressed, I was feeling ever more impressed. Was Buddy's biting ass a thing of his past? As the class carried on through the weeks, Buddy some canine attention did seek. From the other dog in the back, the little sled dog Colby Jack, and I too at my neighbor took peeks. The winter continued, and each week we'd attend class, ever improving until something awful did pass. A terrible smell upon us all fell. There was no denying the source. It was gas. There was a strict rule in place, no farting in school. So Buddy and I, we both played the fool. There were jeers from our peers, but the human next to us, she and her dog played it cool. Well, the odor, it passed after quite a bit of time, and though all knew it was Buddy, he was not levy defined, and in the class we stayed to keep on learning another day, and our respect for Colby Jack, it ever did climb. Then finally it came, the class reached its last day. I looked at Buddy in distress, seeking something to say to our only friends in class who were able to withstand Buddy's gas. But the best I could manage was a lamely meek, hey. But as it turned out, this very tenuous start led to love and adventure, of which I'm lucky to be a part. So a dog I did dread and thus off to school with him headed, or a dog I dreaded and thus off to school with him headed, turned it round and schooled me on the ways of the heart. And to think, he did it all with a fart.
That was Eric Graffy on Arctic Entries. Our live events take place the second Tuesday of each month at the Snow Goose Theater in Anchorage. Anyone can tell a story at Arctic Entries. So go to our website, check out the upcoming show themes, and think about whether you have a story to share. You can also submit that story online through our submit form or our Arctic Entries email. It's almost time to tie things up, but before we do that, we'll give you one more song from artist Meg Mackey.
This next song I'm about to sing is called Crush My Heart, and it's a song that I just recently wrote. So enjoy. I crushed my heart and gave it to you. This distant torture is leaving me blue. I walk this path with a thorn in my side and hope this road leads me back to you. You, yeah, you, yeah. Ooh, ooh, oh, oh. Ooh. dog says it's good to quiet the storm. But in the quiet, I fall to thoughts of you. In the quiet, I fall to thoughts of you, yeah. But in the quiet, I fall to thoughts of you. In the quiet, I fall to thoughts of you. Thoughts of you. Goodbye, sanity, you're gonna be missed. The touch and warmth of a good night kiss. I'll walk this path time and time again. If it means I'm alive, I would sin again.
Thanks for tuning in this hour. To hear these stories again, or to share them with friends, visit arcticentries.com or alaskapublic.org. We also have information on upcoming themes, live shows, and details on how you too could tell a story on the Arctic Entries website.
We'd like to thank our storyboard, the storytellers for this show, our musical guest Bang Mackey, and Anchorage's own Super Saturated Sugar Strings for our theme music. Each month, all the proceeds from our live shows are donated to a local social services nonprofit. This season, the Arctic Entries Storyboard has decided to give our proceeds to Alaska Youth and Parent Foundation's Power Teen Clinic. Power reaches out to at-risk youth, providing them with information, support, and services that help them improve their lives. The funds that are donated at the live shows might go to things like their outreach case manager, their counseling service office, or outreach supplies such as socks, gloves, toothbrushes, toothpaste, hairbrushes, or snack food items for their drop-in center. This has been Arctic Entries on KSK Anchorage. I'm Rosie Robards.
And I'm Jason Brandeis. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to hearing your stories.
What will it be? I want to be yours, but I want to be free. What will we do when times get tough? Improve our life or play from the rough? I love the start of new things to come. And I love your lips, what I get. Me some. We fuss and fight when things go wrong. Will we laugh and sing every day a new song?
We'll just have to see what movie will be. We can swim or sing in our new beginning. Oh, I'll just let it be. No more inquiry, darling, I'll be. No more reassuring. Things are looking up. You're the best of them all.
I keep my word? Would I have resolved? Eat a little less pork and be nice to you all. Don't need to know what the future stores. Just need your touch. Who could ask for more? At the end of this year, will my face look the same? Will we fall in love or just fall like the rain? Just have to see what we will be. We can swim on.